My ambition after that trip to the Highlands was simply to see if Tasmania could make a really good single malt whiskey.
We don't expect everyone to like these wines, so yes, there's some risk.
Drink more sherry, because that's when you can really educate yourself on what happens in maturation.
The thing is with Australian natives, you put them in a gin, the aftertaste invariably is just bitter and unpalatable.
I think the Irish whiskey landscape is going to be wildly different over the next 5 years.
This is the Drinks Adventures podcast. I'm James Atkinson, and this is the show where I speak to some of the world's most exciting producers of beer, wine and spirits, and uncover trends and issues in the drinks industry today. Melbourne brewery Mountain Goat sold its first bottle of beer on October 4, 1997, which means the company is currently celebrating its 25th birthday. That first beer was Hightail Ale. And a few years back, when I put together a list of the most formative beers in modern Australian brewing history, it was right at the top of my 10 selections. I've republished that article on the Drinks Adventures website and link to it from the show notes for this episode. A hell of a lot has changed in the last 25 years since Dave Benighton and Cam Hines made what was, at the time, a pretty crazy move, launching full-flavoured craft beers for an Australian public that weren't really ready for them yet. This is a special episode of the Drinks Adventures podcast, produced in partnership with Mountain Goat. In 2015, the company was acquired by Asahi, which today trades locally as Carlton and United Breweries. Dave and Cam are no longer in the picture, so our guest this episode is Alana Rees, head brewer, who is a veteran of the company. She's been there since before the sale. Much of our discussion surrounds the evolution of craft beer in Australia, and of the product mix at Mountain Goat too. Hightail Ale is no longer in its core range, having made way for some beers that are a little more in keeping with current trends. But I asked Alana first up what Goat has planned to mark its 25th anniversary.
Yeah, one of the things we've sort of looked at doing is revisiting some of our more popular beers from our perspective, you know, working at Mountain Goat, what were some of our favourite beers we produced, and looking at what we can do to do a fresh spin on them, but still sort of bring back some of the memories over the years that we've had. We brought out a couple so far, you know, the Hightail in some cognac and Pedro barrels, which blended together, worked out really well. It's sort of, you know, a bit of a pimped up Hightail, I suppose.
There's been like a, you know, like an Imperial Hightail of some kind done before, hasn't there?
Yeah, there has. They did the 10-year anniversary and the 15 as well. So, yeah, I thought, you know, that's the heart and soul of Mountain Goat, essentially, the Hightail being the original. So that definitely had to be on the list of beers to do. And then we've got a pretty special one coming up for the actual birthday in October, which the one I wanted to do for the special birthday is, well, we can't call it Pulp Fiction anymore. There's been a lot of, obviously, issues with beers being named after things that have been either movies or whatnot. And
did you get a cease and desist from Harvey Weinstein or who? I don't know who it was.
No, I think we would just consider ourselves lucky we didn't, so right. We just don't want to go back there. So, you know, the name just worked well when I was making the beer. So I think we're stuck to just calling it what it is, which is a blood orange IPA. And
I remember that one being good, actually, yeah.
Yeah, it was my first, like I've previously done commercially, Alana Banana was my first keg one, which again was a German Hefeweizen, so hence my love of wheat beers. But this was something I'd sort of thought about for a little while, that combination that would work well, and you know, some fresh blood orange juice in an IPA, and yeah, managed to source some sort of Italian blood orange juice, which is absolutely delicious, and then blended it with a combination of a Citra and Mosaic, which blended, you know, in the right quantities, create like a really nice orange flavour and aroma. So I pretty much had to pimp this to 25 years. So I, 25 grams a litre of hops. It's pretty punch in the face.
So it's the same beer but just higher octane version of it?
Yeah, pretty much. Like I think the original was about 7.8. We're, you know, just making it 7.5, so pretty close. Original hop intake was, I think it's 7.5 grams a litre of combination of the two hops. And this, I've done the same percentage of ratio on the hops, but just total of 25 grams a litre dry hop. and then sort of up the blood orange juice a little bit too, just to make sure it's you still got that happening in there. Yeah, it'd be pretty full on, but you know it is a birthday beer, so.
So they're the two big ones for the anniversary?
They're the two big ones. And then, you know, obviously we've done a few others through the year, which is, you know, we did a Shorefoot stout with some vanilla, which we've released in cans, and some in keg, just around 5.5%. So a little bit higher than the original Shorefoot, just to make sure that body's there. And then we're doing initially a spin on summer ale, and what we call a hazy summer ale, and just use some different New Zealand hops and a little bit of coriander in there just to change it up a bit. Not sort of straying too far from the original recipes, but just putting our own little spin on it. And then we've got coming out in a few weeks, we've back to the brewer, which we did, we're calling it just double steam. And again, just sort of tweaking that slightly, doing a little bit of a modern twist on it. That'll be in keg only. And then we're going to do basically a spin on our pale ale, which originally was released as a North Street pale. And, yeah, just sort of pimping that again with some, you know, some cryo hops and just giving that a little bit of a more of a special twist to it. And I think that one will be in keg and can as well. So, yeah, we've sort of done a few of the others, but, like, the big ones that were the real favourites for us, we've sort of done in, you know, a smaller batch, more rare breed style.
Have you kind of kept pace in recent years with the sort of the level of new beers that were coming out a few years ago and, you know, like in long necks and stuff like that? Because I just remember for a while there that there were always just constantly new Mountain Goat beers coming out. I'm not as kind of aware of that being the case now, but it might just be me being in Sydney, so.
Yeah, look, to be honest, I think we sort of changed our program a little bit. You know, we actually used to just have a rare breed and then a barrel breed program, and that was the specialties we made, and they were the only pack we did. You know, we were initially a 90% keg production site with, you know, 10% pack, and then obviously COVID changed things, and to keep the business alive we had to do some switch up pretty quick. So we were lucky that the GM, Mick Bentley, got some people that he got in contact with, and we produced, you know, just an easy hazy pale ale, and it was supposed to be like a one-off for the Coles consumers. It just went down really well. It went gangbusters. So we've kept producing that beer, and then obviously reached out further with our Billy the Mid. That's, you know, the distribution of that's grown massively, and to the point where we've basically probably, you know, we've got maximum production at the Richmond site with it, and, you know, with all the other products we sort of produce. So being that the case, most of the products that we produce now are in can. We've sort of got a little bit more specialty sort of happening, and then focuses on then only maybe a couple of rare breeds, which are the ones that, you know, the more the traditional people, which we used to produce in the long necks, would be looking for. But, you know, it's still, you know, the creativity side is still happening with our specialties. They're just more open, I suppose, to a larger audience of consumers versus, you know, your real sort of beer nerds, essentially. But, I kind of look at it as, you know, the specialties producing beers, that something we want to be able to drink all the time. If they're not necessarily, the specialties aren't getting into the bottle shops or whatnot near where you are, it probably only seems like there's only a couple of things produced, but, you know, I can tell you, yeah, it's pretty full on from my perspective, keeping up with trying to produce enough, you know, different beers, because I think the whole beer levels and standards have just gone through the roof over the last, you know, probably 5 years. I think, you know, a lot of the smaller breweries have really come ahead in leaps and bounds in their quality of, you know, what they're producing. So I think it's just making, you know, everything a little bit more obviously competitive, which is great for the consumer, because, you know, before the smaller breweries might not have been able to keep consistency with the standard of the products. Yeah, I think it's just trying to create something new all the time is obviously very difficult, because I think everyone's pretty much done everything. Yeah, it's definitely, like I said, it's over the last few years, is the industry's just blown, like, massively. New breweries and the quality of beers is just unbelievable, so.
Yeah, for sure. And what's kind of, you know, when you look at like your largest volume beers, which, you know, I assume are still being produced at Laverton, your largest volume package beers?
Yeah, that's correct. That's correct, yeah. Obviously, once things get to a certain size, we're just not able to do it. And I think when I originally started, we still had steam ale in keg, but that pretty much took all our tanks. So that, you know, that moved to Laverton. We continue to do summer ale draft. Only pretty much that's moved over to Laverton in 2019. So, you know, up until then, we were still producing all the summer ale, and, you know, now we produce all the everything like the pale ale, keg still, you know, any other draft beer specialties. We're all still done out at Richmond. But like I said, with it being a switch in, you know, consumers obviously buying a lot more packaged products than going to the pub, I'd say, doing a lot more cans. But, yeah, the high volume for us is obviously the GOAT, very enjoyable beer. That's, you know, that's massive. And
that took off and did well because it sort of seemed like, again, not being too close to the business, but it sort of looked like you were trying to play in that sort of furfy kind of space of sort of crafty-ish flavours and beers that aren't going to knock your head off, you know what I mean, that are very sessionable.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, when that was designed, we, you know, trials were done out at Richmond, and we tried a few different hops, wanted to keep it simple, something that's easy, refreshing to drink, but then also able to get the hops that, you know, are used in it from a consistent basis, because, you know, the hop markets can change and there can be seasonal issues and whatnot. So, yeah, we ended up going with some Eller and Galaxy in that one, and I believe we're the largest consumer of Eller in Australia from HPA. So
we don't hear much about Eller these days.
No, you don't. Yeah, it's interesting. If you know anything about Eller, so we've actually been asked to do a collaboration with HPA to showcase the Eller, which we're doing a beer for them that'll be released in sort of mid-October. And again, I've went with a sort of thinking outside the box. Eller can be quite tropical in high dry hop forums, and then thought, what else? Go with a sort of German style Hefeweizen that's got sort of the, you know, the banana and the fruitiness happening, and then dry hop it with Eller, and, you know, bring those banana and, you know, tropical notes together, and it worked out a treat. So, yeah, there'll be a small amount of kegs of that coming out in the next sort of month. And again, that's sort of an interesting style. You don't normally see dry hopped Hefeweizens, but it seemed to work, and it's almost along the lines of a sort of a juicy Nipa style of beer, you know, low bitterness, sort of haziness, and then those tropical flavours. But yeah, like going back to the GOAT, we started at Richmond, and it grew so fast that it did, you know, production of that had to go out to be outsourced. I still remember making the first few batches at Richmond, and it was probably, if anything, feedback we got was it's a little bit too hoppy. But originally when you're trying to sort of play in that ballpark of, you know, easy drinking, smashable beers, people don't want too much hops in their face because, you know, old school sort of drinkers might see them as being florally.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. And what about, other than GOAT, tell me about how the other beers in the core range are going. The market's changed a lot since some of those beers came out. So have they still got a following?
Yeah, absolutely. I think they're all got different platforms that people drink them on for different reasons. They're all still, you know, holding up to their own. And it's just, I suppose, like you said, the consumers and what's being produced by a lot of the breweries now is so different. So it's, I think they've more got more of a cult following. And people still enjoy them, you know, and it might be a mix. They might pick up, say, a six-pack of summer ale or something just easy to smash down, and then they might grab a couple of, you know, big IPAs or something just to finish off with. I think we're still finding the relevant out there, and they're definitely in demand. We're continuing to sell them and trying to keep the growth there. Otherwise, you know, we'll revisit our portfolio and work out, you know, if they're worth – continuing, or do we, you know, look at other core beers becoming what we need to do based on where the market's at? But I think, you know, we're not quite there yet. All of those, you know, the summer ale, steam ale in particular, and then the pale ale are still going well. And, you know, Hightail is one we sort of pull back on just purely because amber ales haven't really got a high demand in the market.
Actually, I'm just on your website and it's not listed in the core range anymore. But Fancy Pants, which is a beer that I haven't had for ages, but I really loved, and that's kind of in the core range now.
Yep. Yeah, still produce that in cans. And yeah, I think that one's still sort of chugging along consistently for that little spot, that market where there is people in search of an amber. But like I said, it's not a massive market. Unfortunately, you know, some of us would love to be brewing more Hightail in particular. You know, Naz is part of the furniture and been in with Goat for, you know, 17, nearly 18 years. Would love to see Hightail on tap more often, but I think it's, you know, it's more now we'll just make it as a specialty to sort of revisit it and from nostalgic reasons rather than try and push it to continue the, you know, the growth of it, because it's just, like I said, there's a lot of new categories, new beers. It's sort of, you still got to stay relevant.
And you think Fancy Pants is a little bit more relevant because it just a bit more intense with the flavour that it appeals to the craft drinker a little bit more these days?
Yeah, and it's being dry hopped as well. It's sort of a little bit different. You know, it's not just a standard amber ale, it's a hoppy amber. And yeah, just a, you know, sort of probably fits a bit more of a niche that people follow. Yeah, it's definitely been around for a long time, the Fancy Pants as well. You know, it's good to see it's still relevant to, you know, to a small crowd.
Now, what about the Sydney venue? Last time I went there, it was in the early days. There wasn't production on site. Tell me how that's kind of unfolded.
Yeah, look, it's been a bit of a difficult journey just because the site was actually started and the building was done all remotely because COVID situation that happened. So Mick Bentley basically had to do all the planning and building from Melbourne, not being able to go to the Newtown site. So yeah, just took its time through the whole of the year 2020 before opening in October 2020. And then yeah, it's sort of slowly gotten the growth there before we got a lead brewer there, Brooks. I think that was the key, finding someone to brew on site part-time was always going to be what needed to happen to get the beer being made there. And then he's been working on the brew house there, just creating some different local beers. And yeah, so that's all coming together well. We've had a few, you know, just hiccups in regards to equipment. But yeah, they've got an ability to serve directly from bright tanks too, which is, you know, one of those pretty old school cool things that, you know, Little Creatures used to do back in the day, sort of serve direct from bright tanks. So
has Brooks been able to create a selection of beers that are unique to that venue?
Yeah, absolutely. He's got a fair broad knowledge of different styles of beers. So he's been doing, you know, a lot of sours in particular, which are, you know, easier to do on a small scale. He's done some like raw ales, which are quite interesting. He's very experimental. So I think that's the whole point of that place, is to have a bit of fun. You know, we can supply the core beers on tap, but he can make up, you know, some different sort of small amounts of keg runs and whatnot, and yeah, just be super creative.
You kind of touched on this earlier about like the, you know, the proliferation of new breweries that there's been and how the industry's changed so much. You know, even in the time that you've been at Goat, what about specifically sort of in the area that you're in Melbourne? Has it changed a lot in those 8 years?
The area itself, not really. Like we're in a sort of semi-residential area and we've still got the good old Royston pub over the road, which we still love to obviously head over and have a few beers at, and along with a good feed. But, you know, we've got the Moondog OG not far away. But, yeah, apart from that, a lot of the newer breweries have sort of established themselves in the outer suburbs just because obviously it's setting up a brewery with a lot of the inner city rules is very difficult.
Burnley Brewing would be another one in your area, wouldn't they?
Yeah, and they set up a few years. They're kind of probably a smaller scale brewery.
Yeah.
And there is a couple more that have cropped up, but they haven't set up yet. They're just a few streets up. I think there's Fox Brewing. It's a lot like the actual expansion of the number of them that have been growing is more in the sort of the west side of Melbourne, like out of west or out of east, you know, like the Kaiju guys, you know, sort of got themselves established out in the east, and then, you know, your likes of Hop Nation, and they're over on the west. And yeah, so it's sort of around area. It's sort of stayed pretty stable for a while, like I said, apart from like the Burnley popping up.
But lots of breweries, no doubt, wanting to sell beer in the area from all over Melbourne.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Like I said, it's just I can't keep up with the amount of breweries and different beers out there. I think it's, you know, it's great from a consumer's point of view. It's can be a bit overwhelming, I suppose, but, you know, it's always good to have choice. So
yeah. And is Dave Benighton still sort of hanging around the brewery at all? He was a few years ago when I was there. He was doing a day a week or something like that. I don't know whether that's continued.
No, he's unfortunately not. We all miss him. It's always good to see when he does pop his head in. But no, he sort of started doing quite a bit of travel, which is, you know, something he needed to sort of get away and do some enjoyment. Been working hard for a long time. So he started doing a bit of travel, and then obviously COVID restrictions, so I think he's just dabbling around doing a few little bits and pieces here and there now. So I know he was keen for doing a little bit of whiskey just to sort of understanding spirits a bit more. And
using your brew house or?
Nah, not using ours.
Tell me about, like, what are the actual celebrations going to be like for the 25th, and will Dave and Cam be making an appearance?
The celebrations should be, you know, from what I understand, what the marketing teams sort of put some very special things together. You know, they're obviously going to showcase everything that's been Mountain Goat for 25 years. I think it'd be pretty exciting. Like, we're going to do a separate event out at the Newtown Brew Pub. But I think, yeah, the heart and soul is in Richmond, and that's, you know, there's a pretty big party on the Saturday night, which it's going to be, I think it's the 8th of October. I don't know the exact sort of details of, because they're a bit secretive, the old marketing department, but I know they've got some ideas and they're going to make it pretty special. So, and then along with the launch of the, you know, the Blood Orange IPA, and then hopefully, yeah, I mean, Dave and Cam are definitely on the invite list, and whether or not they can sort of make it, but yeah, I'd hope to see them there. They're both, you know, great guys and done a lot for the beer industry developing Mountain Goat. So, yeah, it'd be great to sort of see them there.
I'm sure they'll make time in their schedules for it. Well, Alana, it's been awesome to chat with you, and, yeah, hope maybe I'll see you in Sydney if the shindig does come up to the venue in Newtown.
Yeah, no worries. Yeah, no, I appreciate your time too. Thanks for the invite.
The Drinks Adventures podcast is produced by me, James Atkinson, with additional production and mixing by Dave Robertson. You can find complete transcripts, links, and other information on the show at drinksadventures.com.au. You can follow me on all social media platforms at by James Atkinson, like my Facebook page, James Atkinson Drinks Adventures, to be kept informed of podcast giveaways and other news about the show. The Drinks Adventures podcast needs your support as listeners. Please do us a favour and leave an honest review and rating for the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. We love hearing your feedback, and it helps inform other people this is a show worth listening to. Or simply drop us a line at hello@drinksadventures.com.au.